Sally and I are fresh off our conference in Las Vegas on distance outreach and technology. We'll share a little bit of information about what went on there. And we'll continue our review of the book, The Shallows, What the Internet is Doing to Our Brains. We talk about how media is now in this little screen in front of us. All that and more. Don't go anywhere. This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello again, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs with Wells Tech, episode 315 for Tuesday, November 12th, 2013. This is a show about technology and ministry and where those two meet, helping me find those intersections each and every week. Sally Draper. Hi, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. Did you realize today was 11, 12, 13? How cool is that, huh?
11, 12. I did not notice that till just now. So what does that mean?
What does that mean? We should fear and love God and thank Him for this wonderful day.
That's right. This day does not happen very often, does it?
No.
There's a name. There's probably a name for this. It's like 11, 11, 11, you know, 11, 12, 13.
Yep. It's called cool stuff. Wow.
Yeah. Leave it to the math teacher to latch on to that little known fact. 11, 12, 13. Well, we better make it a special day then.
Well, absolutely. It's a special day every day that we get to do the Wells Tech podcast. Kind of coming off a special weekend, we were together with some Wells Techers face-to-face at a distance technology
distance outreach and technology conference, right.
Mm-hmm. And that was a great experience.
Las Vegas. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, we got 40 people together to figure out what ways technology could be used to reach out over long distances or even short distances, things like video conferencing and social networking and those kinds of things. And it was a cool group of people, Sally. I learned a lot, and I think they all had fun kind of figuring out the cool things that you could do and the ways that the gospel could be spread.
Yeah, I'm excited to see some great initiatives and additional efforts coming out of that conference. There were representatives from missions, from evangelism, from technology, of course, from communications, and we talked about things that cross over all those different things. I think the big point that I took away is that technology is the servant, not the master. So mm-hmm. Can't be all about the shiny technology. What we have to be is mission focused and you know, use the tools that God has given us to share that great message that we have.
Yep. Saw a bunch of friends of the show that we hear from on a pretty regular basis. Rob Gunther was there. Clint Rogus was there. Met another listener that I didn't know we had. Sylvie Sullivan was there. She's a regular listener. So shouts out to all of those folks. And I'm sure I'm leaving out a bunch of other people. But kind of birds of a feather there. And that was kind of cool to talk about technology with them. And hopefully the Lord will bless our work and there'll be some cool things coming out of that conference.
Absolutely. Cool things going on here today. We're talking about The Shallows. It's a book by Nicholas Carr. And the subtitle is interesting, What the Internet is Doing to Our Brains. I feel it changing my brain every second, Martin. We got some neuroplasticity going on in there, and we're being rewired as we talk to each other over Google Hangouts this morning, I believe.
I'm convinced, I guess. I've only read now, we're on chapter 5, is it, today?
Mm-hmm.
We've only read 5 of, you know, we're not even halfway through the book, maybe, and I think that I see what he's saying in my own life, and I think you've said that too, just the shorter attention span, the ability for the brain to be very flexible yet still inflexible to some degree as well. It can be retrained, but we're kind of stuck with the internet, so to speak, so we have to deal with it. But if we're going to have to deal with it, we probably should figure out what it's doing to us and account for it.
Yeah. It's interesting, as I read, then I come across other things away from the book that tie right into that concept of our shorter attention spans and those kind of things. A couple of links I'm going to throw in the show notes today are from Barna, the research group that often does research related to church trends and things. And they had a recent article about how technology is changing the millennial faith. They outline things like people doing church shopping online, searching for scriptural content online, doing fact-checking of sermons, things like that that just didn't exist maybe 10 years ago. I was reminded of our Wells Q&A. There's an area on the Wells.net site for questions and answers, and I think probably the highest searched area of the whole website. And so you know it's true that millennials are out there using digital tools and seeking faith-related answers.
Yep. So this chapter, at least in my opinion, was kind of about the transition from mass media to this little screen in front of us, whether that's a computer screen, a tablet screen, or a phone screen. One of the quotes early on in the chapter says, "The net differs from most of the mass media it replaces in an obvious and very important way. It's bidirectional." So it has, for many, replaced the TV, it's replaced the radio, it's replaced mail, it's replaced a lot of different things, cassette tapes, 8-track tapes, whatever, your record player, and it is replaced it in a unique and different way. It isn't the fact that there's a dimension that old mass media couldn't account for, and that's that I can talk back, or I can share, or I can interact with, and that's what a computer brings to the table, and that brings with it some things.
Right. And interestingly, he points out that just because we have the net and all that's associated there, TV viewing hasn't really fallen off that much. But in contrast, reading has. So we are reading less, or maybe we're reading more online, and he's not really counting that because it's a different kind of reading when you're reading online. But
yeah, it all started to happen in the mid-2000s, quote here, by 2008, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, the time that the average American over the age of 14 devoted to reading printed works had fallen to 143 minutes a week, a drop of 11% since 2004. So in 4 years, we dropped over 10% of the time we spend in books. And I'm sure that's a precipitous fall even further now that we're 10 years, beyond, or 10 years beyond 2004.
Right. He spent a lot of time looking at the newspaper industry in particular, and the fact that many newspapers have shuttered or gone to online delivery only. You guys have heard those articles, those announcements coming out as different newspapers shut down. Even the ones that are changing the way that they deliver news in print. He mentioned the Wall Street Journal and the LA Times trimming the length of their articles and introducing more summaries and navigational aids so that the content is easily scannable, because that's the way we read on the net. We don't get into the deep reading, the lengthy articles. I think he even mentioned Rolling Stone used to always have very lengthy articles, and they've gone away from that as their platform.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of things that change when you move from paper to screen, how you interact with it, how you are engaged with it or immersed with it. The quote he provides here is, the shift from paper to screen doesn't just change the way we navigate a piece of writing, because obviously navigation is linear on a piece of paper, but not so. It doesn't have to be on a screen. It also influences the degree of attention we devote to it and the depth of our immersion in it, so how engaged we are with it versus just kind of skimming the surface and being consumed by it, like you can with a good book versus a quick clip or a tweet. Big difference.
Mm-hmm. One of the more interesting quotes I found in the chapter is related to how we are reliant on search engines, and we don't look for the big picture when we're searching. We're delving down into very specific matches on what we're looking for. And he says a search engine often draws our attention to a particular snippet of text, a few words or sentences that have strong relevance. It provides little incentive for taking the work as a whole. So we don't see the forest when we search the web. We don't even see the trees. We see twigs and leaves. And I got a real kick out of that.
Yeah. This is a, I don't know if this is a problem, but I think as I look at the way I interact with media, I'm paying more attention now to it, mm-hmm. and I think I pay more attention to how I write as well, whether it's an email or whether it's a blog post or what. I think it does influence the writer as well as the reader if you kind of understand what's going on in the mind of your reader now, your typical reader.
Sounds like the medium's becoming the message, huh?
I've heard that somewhere before.
Yeah.
He closes the book, this chapter, I should say, with an illustration. He's talking about the architecture of one of the newest branches of the New York Public Library. And he talks a little bit about where they put things, and you know, at the center now is just a bunch of tables with computers on them, which is what people now go to the libraries for, is to interact with computing devices. And at the last sentence or so of this chapter, he says, the library's layout provides as well a powerful symbol of our new media landscape. At the center stands a screen of the internet-connected computer. The printed word has been pushed to the margins. Interesting. And I think we're going to see that more and more as we live in a generation where we've moved from long-form books, you know, books of thousands of pages that people would sit down and read, like War and Peace or whatever, to blog posts, which were shorter, to tweets. And now I think what's after the tweet is just pictures. we're going that direction where it's so bite-sized that it's just a glance to communicate, and that we have to understand that as communicators, that generation is rising up, and we need to understand still how to communicate the gospel in on whatever channel they're on.
Absolutely. Good reading. I'm looking forward to the next chapter, Martin. We'll tackle that in December.
Yep, remember, it is called The Shallows, What the Internet is Doing to Your Brain, by, who's the author again,
Sal? Nicholas Carr.
Nicholas Carr. If you want to follow along at home, it's not too late. We're taking a chapter a month, and we'd love to have you along and offer your comments as well by leaving a comment. So, good stuff. Sally, we have an interview this week, one that I had been looking forward to for a while. The iPad app, Who is Jesus?
That's correct.
Who is Jesus? We talked about maybe last year or earlier this year when it first came out. Just a beautiful app that talks through some of the components of the Road to Emmaus video and gives the viewer an idea of just who this Jesus is and what he has done for us. It's a very beautiful app. It's engaging. It includes maps. It includes video. It includes quizzes, all kinds of interactivity, which is really good for the person who wants to be walked through it from start to finish. And as much as it's a pretty app, that content all had to come from someplace, and most of that content came from Pastor Jared Oldenburg from Castle Rock, Colorado, and we had a chance to sit down with him and talk to him about what it took to put all the content into Who is Jesus. Let's listen to our conversation, Jared. We're very happy today to have joining us Pastor Jared Oldenburg from Castle Rock, Colorado, at Eternal Rock there. Hi, Jared.
How are you doing?
Good. Thank you for joining us. Appreciate it. See, you got the sweater on. You have snowflakes falling over there?
Not quite yet. It's cool out.
Okay.
I wanted to look presentable for the for the podcast. So.
Yeah, I think all the snowflakes are in New Ulm, right, Sally?
Yeah, actually, we've got white ground here.
Okay. Thanks again for taking the time. I know you're a busy guy, and lots of ministry opportunities there in Castle Rock, just like any other place. But wanted to talk to you a little bit about a neat project that we've talked about on the show before, and that's an iPad app called Who is Jesus? Before we jump into the app itself, maybe tell us and our listeners, viewers, a little bit about yourself, Jared.
From Appleton, Wisconsin, which is, I think, north of where you are, Martin, A couple hours, born, raised there. Mom and Dad, my dad taught high school for 45 years at the Lutheran High School. And
wow.
My mom's a public school counselor. So that's where I grew up. That's also where I met my wife. So we were 14 and 15 and started dating 1991. So we've been together since then. Moved out to interned a number of places, moved out to outside of Seattle to start a church in 2002, and then just recently made our way to Castle Rock to start another church in 2010.
Okay. Just you and your wife, or you got kiddos too?
We do have three kids, so Isabella, Petra, and Owen, so 12, 10, and 6.
Okay. What size congregation do you have out there, and did you start that congregation there?
Right, just started services a couple years ago, and we have about 100 people or so right about now.
Wow, wonderful. What a blessing. So that's awesome. I'm sure you have your hands full with a young family, a couple church starts, and now you've got this app. Tell us a little bit about how that all came together. It's a wonderful app, and we're going to show it off here as you talk, but tell us a little bit about how you got involved with the project.
I'm not sure exactly how my name got in the mix, but Steve Betcher, I'm sure you've talked to him before on the show.
Mm-hmm.
He produces the videos for Road to Emmaus, and he had this idea that MacDill Design, if you've heard of them, they're the ones who did all the design work. I think they donated all the design work, which is pretty phenomenal, in the book, and they needed someone to write the content. So he called me. I was going on my way to ski, actually, and said, hey, do you want to be involved in this project? And if you've ever talked to Steve, he can get you pretty excited about just about anything. So mm-hmm. I was trying to be judicious, and I said, let me think about it. 5 minutes later, I called him back and said, I really want to be involved in this. So then that started the process, and that was probably a couple years ago now that I think about it.
What was your initial thought when he talked to you, other than, you know, what is this thing? Were you kind of in the technology space before you understood what the concept was and the potential?
Again, I don't know how my name exactly. I think he said I blog, and I think I've written 3 blogs total when I started.
Yeah.
So I started with my church, and I wanted to have a way that people could keep track of the history and things like that. But somehow he saw me as a blogger that was really hip and trendy, and obviously I use Mac products, and I have an iPhone and had an iPad at the time, and seemed like something that could be pretty exciting.
So how did you go about writing the content? You mentioned that the Road to Emmaus videos existed previously. Did you kind of go off of that timeline that's presented in the movie? Or?
Yeah, exactly. So we wanted to springboard off something we already had. We thought that video was well-received, and our people knew of it. I think they've distributed 300,000 copies, something like that. And we wanted to springboard off that content, and so it made sense to me to kind of move along on that same timeline and then just expand on what you don't have if you just watch the short video. So from my perspective, that was the hard part. It's one thing if you write a really compelling book and someone says, hey, we want to make this into something really exciting. And in this case, they said, it's up to you. So we had to do one chapter at a time to start with, which was, I think that's difficult in the process because you have to kind of look down where you're going. I preached a sermon series on each part, just so I could get a feel of it and see what worked and what didn't work, and then eventually started producing, and then I got to pick the input for what kind of interactive things I thought would be worthwhile for the audience.
Very good. And there's a variety of interaction there. Obviously, the movie comes into play, but there's also maps and other things. So maybe you could give us kind of a run-through of the extra pieces that are included.
Each part, so I wanted to explain simple things. So people see the Bible, they're pretty intimidated. And my audience was really the key thing. I had to determine who is this written for. And from my perspective, I was writing it for someone who had some familiarity with Christianity. And in my own instance, I run a Bible Basics every 3 times a year because I like a group a little bit better than individual classes. So I thought, like, for example, we just started one 2 weeks ago, but then I had someone who started came to church, two families that said, we want to be in your Bible Basics. So now I've got a period now until February before that starts up. So I needed something I could get into their hands. They could hear the message of the gospel, which is so counterintuitive to us. I mean, we think we work, and God will love us. And if I could somehow expose people to the idea of Jesus died, Jesus has done it, and Jesus is the way of salvation, at least once or twice before they're in my class, it's not going to be such a shocker, even though it always will. But as far as content, that's how we went about it. So we said, what basic maps do they need to know? Some of that's simplified. The timelines are simplified. I didn't say, like, Moses exact year, but just ballpark of 1500. David ballpark of 1000, hopefully. So it's something that's a little bit more memorable to people. And then, so simplified maps, simplified outlines, and of course the video that's connected with it as well. And then at the end of each chapter, we had simple questions just to make sure. Most people that are going to read this are adults. They're responsible for their own education. But if they wanted to, they could go through some simple questions to make sure if they were they got what we were talking about.
And I assume you've gotten reaction from the book. It's been out for a little while now. What kind of stories do you have to share in regard to people using the book?
This is my own use. The McDill Design and Steve Betcher and Mike Trinkline, they handle all the other end of it. I have no idea how many have sold, and I have no idea how it's been distributed. I barely got to name it, so I'm just kind of hang out in the end, this end of it. But for my end, I've got to share it with a number of people that are waiting or getting ready for our Bible Basics, and it's really been well received. And they said it's been really clear. It sounds terrible to say well written, but they felt like it moved along. It's not all that long, 50 pages or so they could read it in a day or two. And real positive results that I've heard from there.
So when you sat down to write it, where did you start? I mean, this is it's a pretty big nut, and you could have started in 101 different places. Did you collaborate on the script then, or did you say, if I'm going to teach this, I'm going to teach it like maybe I would with an animated or kind of a fancy BIC class?
The way I looked at it was they sent me copies of the script, so I've seen the movie maybe 3 times, but I thought that's going to get old if I just keep watching it to figure it out. So they sent me a copy of the script, multiple versions, which is kind of fun to see how it got changed.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
And then I just made my own marks deciding roughly how many chapters we want. And then from there, what is the main driver for each of these points that moved along with the movie? And then my take was the movie's really good, but not everyone is going to go through the time to hit the movie. Just like not everyone's going to hit all the pictures, like not everyone's going to hit
right.
The timelines. So I wanted the story itself or the book itself to be able to drive all the way from beginning to end without necessarily seeing the video. So I kind of summarize a little bit of what happens in the video, so that could be the main driver. So hopefully one day it could be in a different venue that's a little bit more widespread. As you know, iPad, iBooks are not as big a platform such as like Kindle or even Android apps or iPad apps themselves.
Yeah. So what's your prayer for this project? You know, what do you hope that it accomplishes? How do you see it being used?
That's a good question. I should. My goal would be that it's going to open doors for people that are just not quite sure, and it's going to pique curiosity and make them sense that there is a God out there who cares for them, and hopefully get plugged into a local church. There's an American idea that we just have this relationship between me and God, and it doesn't matter what you think about that. I can worship God on a mountain. I can worship God in a closet, but really it's the community believers that support people, a pastor there to take care of them spiritually and guide them in God's Word. That's the ultimate goal. This is not the end. It's just hopefully a springboard for people to get involved into a church community.
So I'm really curious if you have other books in the making now. Did this spark a side of you that you want to continue to develop? Or are you going to do something for the new Road to Emmaus video that's coming out?
They haven't talked to me about that, so I'm not sure. this is a lot of work for me. Sermons are work, but it's kind of in my wheelhouse, and writing a book is work for me. I mean, the drafts and drafts and drafts and drafts to make sure it's clear and sending it out to friends. I mean, this sounds like it's bad, but it took up quite a bit of time for a year, and my goal with this book or something like it would be to get it into a bigger platform I think could that I could share more readily. Right now you can't gift iBooks yet that I know of. That would be ideal for me. I could send it to people who are thinking about it. Kindle's a bigger thing. If we could somehow maybe springboard this into an app, that would be fantastic because that's such a big market. Something real simple that if people don't have an iPad, we could share something like this very easily. That would be my ultimate. But as far as I know, no books in the right around the corner yet. I've got young kids yet, and I've got to be a responsible dad.
Absolutely. You've got many ministries. I think just my general impression of the concept is, yes, this is a great proof of concept. You know, it's a limited platform, but the possibilities are just tremendous in this kind of format, and I think it transcends age groups. You know, you could produce something on different levels in a similar tool, similar format, and be equally as effective. And especially when you have a great piece of content to start with, you know, not just God's Word, but the movie, you know, itself to pull from. So that just seems like a win-win, and hopefully this will take off and, you know, get in the hands of believers who can and use it as a, you know, not just to strengthen their own faith, but obviously to share with friends, family members, whoever. So,
quick plug for the website, whoisjesusbook.com, and there's a link right there where you can buy the book through the iTunes bookstore. So check it out.
Jared, thanks so much for taking the time and your work on this project. What a labor of love it sounded like, and blessings on your future work and ministry and wherever that takes you.
All right. Sure, appreciate it.
Our thanks to Jared for spending a little bit of time with us, giving us a behind-the-scenes look at how to build the content for a pretty all-inclusive app, Sal. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I was really excited to hear that development process. And, you know, I think it's great that they've put this together, and kind of one of the themes that came out of the conference that we were at was go more mobile, because that's where people are. People are consuming content on their mobile devices. So it's kind of cutting edge that they took the time and effort to put in to create such a beautiful app, and hopefully it'll be the first of many that will come out that share the good news of Jesus Christ.
Very cool. Let's move on. We should make a little segment here, promo for our listener review section, of which we have none this week. But if you would like to contribute one, it can be a review about something that's useful in ministry, a hardware device, a software package, a website, something that you feel would be helpful for other people to understand how good or bad it is. It doesn't always have to be a good review. It can be a bad review. So if you've got a little gadget or a website or a software package that you've installed and you'd like to give us a review, it can be written, can be on YouTube, whatever, we will post it, and if it's worth sharing, we will share it. Mm-hmm. And if we do share it, you'll be entered to win a fabulous prize. What's our prize for listener reviews, Sally?
I believe it's a Nexus 7 tablet, Martin.
That's right.
We're going to collect all of these through the end of May in 2014, and everyone that's contributed a review will be in a drawing for a Nexus 7 tablet. Probably the best odds you'd ever have to win a Nexus 7 tablet.
Yeah, we only have a few reviews in so far. So mm-hmm. Now is the time to get that in there, get your name on the list. The next segment, we also are giving away and a prize, and that's an Apple TV, and that's our ministry resources. Do we have a ministry resource this week?
We do. It's not from a listener, so nobody's in the drawing for this one, but it is a great ministry resource nonetheless, as we look forward to the coming Advent and Christmas season. I wanted to remind our listeners of the website freebibleimages.org, and in particular, if you go there and select their themes, you can get to the page that has Christmas-themed resources. So that's the page we're going to link to specifically. Perhaps you're putting together some information to support your Christmas worship services or whatever it may be. There are all kinds of images available here, both photographic images of the Christmas story as well as drawn or kind of cartoon images of the Christmas story. And you can incorporate these for free, royalty-free, into whatever resources you're producing. So if you're looking for some imagery, maybe it's for a Bible class, maybe it's for to support your sermons that you're going to be preaching during the Christmas season, whatever it may be, check out free Bible images. And while you're there, look around, because they have many books of the Bible represented. They have different characters in the Bible and information about them. And of course, many different themes that are part of the Bible represented in different imagery, photographic and drawn imagery. So make use of this great resource.
Yeah, and they make it very easy to find by those sorting criteria. So if you have a character that you're maybe producing a sermon series for, or a Bible lesson of some sort, or a Bible passage, you can do that by searching on the appropriate category there. So mm-hmm. It is a great resource. We've talked about it in the past, but now is the time if you're looking for those Christmas resources.
Definitely.
I think it's time now, Sally, for our tips of the week. And as is our tradition, I get to go first. And my tip is an oldie but goodie, something that I use all the time and never think to identify as, you know, one of those, boy, cool, this is a really cool thing, but it's a very useful thing, and that's in your browser, and this works on almost any browser because they've all kind of gotten together and said, well, we need a common keyboard shortcut for opening new tabs or opening new windows. And so this works on almost any browser. If you hit the Control T or the Control N key, or on a Mac, Command T or Command N, those will open up new tabs or new windows respectively. So you don't have to remove your hand from the keyboard and move it over to the mouse and click on the little plus or the little parallelogram, I guess that would be, in Chrome to open up a new tab. Or for new window, you actually have to go up into the menu and do a couple clicks to get that new window open. If you just hit Control T or Control N, you're going to open up tabs or windows. And just kind of as a bonus tip, if you add the Shift key to that, it will open up the last tab that you close. So if you mistakenly closed a tab, or you just want to pull that resource up again and you knew you had it up before, Control-Shift-Tab would bring up the last tab that you closed.
So. Always learn something new from you, Martin. That's awesome. I didn't know about that shift trick.
Yep.
Very good.
What's your tip this week, Sally?
Mine has to do with my life of travel these last few days and the fact that my iPhone became my best friend. You guys that are listeners maybe know that I reviewed my new iPhone a few weeks ago. I haven't been a smartphone person up until now. I just had a really cheap track phone for a cell phone. And so I'm living the iPhone life, and I like it. I'm happy with it. I'm happy to, you know, have the telephone capability. I've been really pleased with my coverage and all that kind of stuff. But to be honest, it's kind of a small format for my old eyes. It's little, and I can't do a whole lot on the iPhone as compared to on my computing device. So the good news about the iPhone, and my favorite thing about it, is that I'm always connected, and that's new for me, to have the internet in my pocket wherever I go. I can be on the internet. What I very quickly discovered, though, was the tethering capability. So if you guys aren't familiar with tethering, that means that my iPhone can become a mobile hotspot, basically, and I can use the internet that's on my iPhone on my other computing devices. And honestly, I don't know that I would have gotten through this weekend very well without tethering. Oftentimes when you go somewhere and you need to present or need access to the internet, you're reliant on their wireless network. And these two congregations that we were in Las Vegas this weekend had wireless networks available for us and everything, but when you have 40 people hit your wireless network simultaneously, it doesn't tend to hold up to that kind of traffic. So I was able to hop off, be on my very own connection via my cell phone, tethered on my iPhone, and stay connected the entire time, which became important. We were relying on Google Docs to take notes in, and you know, having the iPhone capability was a big plus. So I am a bigger fan of iPhones now than I was, thanks for the trip and for that experience. I get it about tethering, and if you haven't experienced that, I encourage you to give it a try.
Yep, not all phones do it, or not all phones do it automatically. Sometimes you have to pay for that extra service, but depending on how much you do travel, it's a great feature to have because you always have that hotspot. One thing you have to watch out for is it will drain your battery. Mm-hmm. So it'll obviously drain it faster than if you're just using your phone for its own surfing, because now you're attaching another device to it. But it's also a good way to avoid maybe some of the pitfalls of open Wi-Fi security issues. So if you're at a hotel or whatever, being on your own hotspot is a little bit safer because you can control the SSID and all. You can hide it if you want, and obviously change or create a new password. So. Mm-hmm.
I was concerned about how much data I was consuming because, you know, obviously you have a data plan with your cell phone coverage. But, you know, I wasn't doing a lot of heavy-duty stuff. I didn't have any videos or pictures transmitting back and forth. I was really just typing into documents, and it was fairly low. I was surprised because I used it pretty solid for a day and a half, and wasn't a big deal in terms of data usage. So,
cool.
Good experience.
Good. Sal, let's move on to our picks of the week.
All right. I'm going to do a quick screen share and show you the Google and Education Training and Certification Center. For those of you that are into Google Apps for Education, this is a place where you can go and learn more. And if you look along the top, they have basically coursework, reading, resources that they've set up for Apps Admin, Gmail, Drive, Calendar, and sites. So if you just want to learn more about Google Apps and Education, this is basically getting it from the source. This is their training resources that they put together. And that may be adequate for your needs. However, you may want to pursue some certification. There's actually a couple of levels to that Google offers. You can take the qualifying exams after reviewing this course material. There's actually a website called Google Testing Center. You have to create an account here. It's not your regular Google account. You have to create an account to have it here. And once you're here, you can click on Purchase Test, and they actually have several different series of tests. So you can take tests on Google AdWords, on Google Analytics. The ones that I'm talking about are here under Google Apps for Education. And each individual test on those five areas costs $15, so you can get all five of them for $75. And once you're done and have passed the test, then you get you become a Google, not a certified trainer, but you have a Google designation that you've completed these tests. The test lasts 90 minutes, and once you start them, you have to complete them in that time frame. Once you start your first test of the bundle, you have 90 days to complete the entire bundle. And that would make you, I want to say, instructor certified or something like that. A qualified individual, they call it.
Yes.
But there is one other level, and that's called a Google Apps Certified Trainer. And I'll have one more link in the show notes to a page that explains a little bit about being a certified trainer. So this is basically, I want to take it to the next level and be certified by Google to train other people, not just point them to the resources, but actually lead training sessions and things like that. And that takes a little more work. You have to do a case study and submit video of you and things like that. But if you're interested, there's a whole path for becoming a certified trainer as well. So again, three levels. You can just come here to the training and certification center and read through the materials and learn about it that way and not really pursue any certification. You can take the five exams and become a qualified individual, or you can go further and become a certified trainer. And I'll have links to all of that in the show notes.
Cool. And you are going down that path, right?
I am. I'm starting with the exams, and hopefully they won't be too difficult. We'll see
how
it goes.
You haven't taken any yet?
Not yet, but okay. I'll let you know how it goes.
All right, cool. My pick is a hardware pick and something that came in handy over the weekend at our conference, and that is a little Bluetooth speaker. And it is a called the JBL Charge. Looks like, for those of you listening at home, it's about 6 inches wide and about two and a half inches tall. It's a cylinder. It looks like
A camera lens.
It looks kind of like a beer can, doesn't it?
I thought it was a camera lens.
Yeah, about that too. Maybe a little bit. Yeah, exactly. It's very light. The reason that it's called the JBL Charge is not only a speaker, but it also has on the end of it a USB port that you can plug in and charge. So it's got a battery inside, so you charge it up and then it can act as a battery. So you can plug in your phone or whatever to get it charged. By itself, it will play music for about 12 hours. So it's got a pretty good size 6,000 milliamp battery, lithium ion rechargeable battery, about 12 hours of playback time. It has a big speaker on the front and then a little one on the side, so you can set it down flat, long ways, or you can set it up, you know, like you would a can, because it's got a little pad on the bottom here, so it's not going to vibrate. Pretty big sound. It really only does, you know, the playback. It's not a speaker phone per se. It is just a Bluetooth speaker. It also does have a little auxiliary port, so you can plug in an audio jack from your computer or from your phone or whatever and do it that way if you don't want to use Bluetooth. Very easy to set up. Big sound. We used it, Sally, in a room, I don't know how big it was, but we had 40 people in that room. And so we played, I think, a clip from The Road to Emmaus using this, and sounded just like we had bigger speakers in there. It was a great sound coming out of here. So I guess it wouldn't fill up a medium-sized church, but it would fill up, I think, a medium-sized fellowship hall. So if you're looking for something very portable, it comes with a neoprene case, so it fits right in here, very portable, charges pretty quickly. Obviously, you have sound controls on it, a power button, and that's basically it. But if you're looking for something portable to carry around maybe from room to room and want to get sound out of your computer or your iPad or your iPhone or your Android tablet or phone, this is a great choice. $149, so it's not on the real low end, but it's not way up there like you would pay for like a Bose or even like the jam boxes. Those are, you know, one that puts out about the same amount of sound as this is about $250, so another $100 you'd have to pay. So I went in and asked, I wanted the biggest sound for the least amount of money, and this is what the store representative recommended, and you know, I'm sold. It's a really good thing. I took it in my backpack on the plane out to Las Vegas, and did the trick. So if you're looking for something to pump out some pretty good sound, pretty good bass, not a bad price tag. So that's the JBL Charge, and we'll have a link in the show notes to review, and you can just do a quick Google search for it.
Excellent. I can attest that the sound was awesome, and as a speaker, it's really discouraging when you want to play a video during your presentation and it's just the little small sound coming out of your computer speakers. That becomes a really valuable asset to have at your disposal. So great.
Yeah, with Bluetooth, you can push this a little bit away from the source too. I think Bluetooth, you can get 10, 15 feet away and it'll still, you know, produce a sound. So you're not tethered by a wire. So
excellent.
Good solution.
Yep.
Sally, we have some streaming coming up this Sunday we want to share with everybody. If you want to tune in to the seminary's 150th anniversary celebration, Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary is 150 years old. They're having a concert, a festival service. They're actually having two of them, 3 o'clock and 7 o'clock, but we're going to be streaming the 3 o'clock one this Sunday. That's November 17th. So if you go to the seminary homepage, I'm sure it'll be listed there. If you go to wells.net, it'll probably be listed there as well. So if you want to tune in and be a part of a wonderful celebration, there's going to be a joint choir there from all of the Synod School, all four of the Synod Schools. So MLC, MLS, LPS will join Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary. And our own Brian Gerlach, worship administrator, will be there doing the liturgy. And Pastor Mark Schrader, our beloved president, will be doing the preaching. So,
actually, Brian's going to be on the organ bench, Mark.
Oh, okay. He's
going to be a super treat for anyone that's there.
Best organist. Yeah, he is awesome at the behind the keyboard there. So,
very good.
So that's coming up this Sunday to 3 o'clock Central.
Right. Wanted to make mention of a contest that we have been made aware of. This is from the Bread for Beggars website. We met Pastor Mark Parsons, another WellsTech interviewee, in person this past weekend, and he's the man behind Bread for Beggars, and their goal has been to produce great Christian multimedia to highlight it, and actually now with this contest encourage the production of it. So their contest just kicked off. It's called a Christmas Music Video Contest, and what they're encouraging you to do is put together a music video and submit it for judging. And you can either record yourself or a group of people singing, or you can select pre-recorded music, and Coin A has even donated like 6 or 8 of their Christmas hymns that you can use for your music video. So lots and lots of options for what music you can use. So if you're into the singing part and you have a great choir and you want to highlight that, you could use that recording as your background for your music video, or you can use some of this pre-recorded stuff. So lots of ways to participate, and there are prizes involved, a really long list of prizes. So, and ultimately we win the prize because we get to see all these great videos and share them and spread the good news that is unique to our Christmas celebration. So, get your game on, all you video producers and singers out there. Artists of all types can participate in this first Christmas music video contest sponsored by Bread for Beggars.
Cool. It was good to meet Mark in person. We've only met digitally, but we got to meet in person out there. And if you're not aware, breadforbeggars.com, make it a link in your browser and visit frequently. Good stuff there.
Most definitely.
Community feedback, Sally.
All right. One more screen share here, if I'm coordinated. I wanted to highlight an article that I tagged, and this is kind of a niche thing. This would be for teachers who are using iPads in the classroom. But what this particular article focuses on is a new feature in iOS 7 for AirDrop. And it's only, you know, available on newer devices with iOS 7, but basically allows for easy file sharing, especially files in the camera roll. In the past, if students were creating things in their camera roll, you'd have to use maybe a Dropbox method or emailing, and that can get really cumbersome, especially with video files. But AirDrop actually works via your local wireless network or even Bluetooth to very quickly transfer files from one iPad device to another. So if you're in that space where you have a bank of iPads and you've struggled with gathering your students' content, then I think AirDrop may be a solution you want to look into. So check out this article.
Great.
All right, next up I just wanted to make mention of email we received, Martin, and it was from Emmy, who is at Emmanuel in Greenville, Wisconsin, and she was looking for some instructions to assist website visitors with RSS subscriptions. So I thought that was pretty cool. She's definitely got the hat on of her audience, who's coming to perhaps make use of some of the devotional content or whatever it may be that's available on the Greenville, Emmanuel Greenville website. And she wants to help them and educate them about using podcasts, using RSS feeds. And so she was looking for some resources, some help resources along those lines. And I guess this can be a shout out to any of our listeners who have any of that kind of information available on their own websites and are willing to share it as an example for others. Also just kind of a nudge to again put on the hat of your audience, and I think Emmy's doing a great job here to assist those People that may not be familiar with subscribing to podcasts or using iTunes or whatever delivery mechanism, so that they can more easily absorb your content that you're producing on a regular basis. Last thing I want to say about Emmy is that her email address is socialmedia@Emmanuel, and I just love the fact that they actually have someone who has an email address with social media. So obviously there's some communication planning going on there at Emmanuel in Greenville, and they're thinking about using social media as part of their strategy for sharing the good news. So
and we
keep
had
up the good work.
Pastors at Las Vegas with us, Dave Sharp.
That's right.
Here from Emmanuel.
Yep.
So good stuff apparently going on up in
for sure. Greenville,
which is just outside of Appleton.
Martin, you were tweeting recently, I understand.
Yeah, I found an article the other day in Business Insider entitled Teens Are Deserting Facebook and They're Heading to Places Where Their Parents Can't Find Them. Sounds ominous, and it kind of is if you are relying on Facebook to find your teens, because they're not there anymore, apparently. Because some churches are just figuring out how to use Facebook, thinking, yeah, we can hit the younger generation if we just get on that Facebook thing. And that may not be the case much longer. Great article. They have some data here and some things that they're suggesting are changing pretty rapidly. And actually where the kids are going are these mostly texting or media sharing apps. One that they talk about a lot is called WhatsApp. And that's not real big in the U.S., but it's getting there. They reference WeChat and KakaoTalk, but they're basically these private peer-to-peer kinds of things that circumvent the SMS messaging of the phone services, so they actually save money as well. But what has to happen is you have to have these apps installed on the receiver and the sender's devices. So, you know, they are figuring out how to do that and figuring out that they don't need to make all their stuff public anymore, that they can have these private communities and private conversations over channels that nobody else is watching or listening on, including their parents or those in authority. So that's something that the church needs to be aware of. Not that they maybe need to get over there, but they have to figure that just because they're on Facebook or whatever doesn't mean automatically that you're going to be communicating with the kids. So worth a watch or a listen. There's a little video here too. But take a read of this article and understand that, hey, there is... yeah, there's something going on here that you need to pay attention to, especially if you're a youth leader. So,
one thing we can be sure of is technology is going to change.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Right. And probably a good rule of thumb that once the old folks get on these cool tools, the kids leave. So it's a constant battle trying to figure out how best to connect with our youth. So
yep.
Pay attention.
Very true. All right, one more thing I want to share. Let's see if I can make that happen. This comes from our friend Rachel Pearson, who teaches at Trinity in Waukesha, Wisconsin. And she, like me, is a TechSmith fangirl. We love TechSmith for all the great video and image production capabilities they give us with Camtasia and Snagit and other tools that they offer. And TechSmith is getting in the Chrome app game. So you can actually sign up on the TechSmith website. We'll have a link to this in the show notes to be part of beta testing for their Chrome app. And basically, there's a form at the bottom of this article that you can just submit your email address, wait for an email from TechSmith, and they'll provide you with linkage to join their group and get access to the application. I actually got my email yesterday, signed up thanks to Rachel, and got my email. So this red icon that's now part of my extension area here is the TechSmith Snagit beta. So when I click the icon, I can actually take a screenshot from my computer, just like I would with Snagit. It brings it in and allows me to do some real rudimentary kind of annotation to it, like I can add arrows and things like that. And then I can easily share that, and it gives me a Google shortened URL to be able to share that image easily. So let's see if I copy that URL. I should be able to see the screenshot I just took. Not sure how well all of this is showing up.
Well, we didn't see any of the capture part.
Okay. So, but there's the screenshot that I just took. It actually
pushed it right up to Google Drive, huh?
To my Google Drive. So cool. Yeah, I'm excited to see TechSmith get into this this area, and I'm expecting great things from their plugin. And right now, I'm going to have a little influence over it because I'm a beta tester. I can give them feedback about what I like and don't like about the product. Yep. So if you want to be part of that beta testing, then check out the link in the show notes.
Yeah, pretty soon, Sally, both you and I are going to have more plugins than we have room for up there in the bar, and we won't be able to
more
type in the URL.
More plugins than we know what they are.
Yeah, that's the thing, too. Fortunately, when you mouse over them, they tell you what they are. So,
right.
If you would like to contribute to our community feedback section, we'd love it if you would. Go to wellstech.wells.net and leave a comment on the show notes page there, or click on any of the social media type icons at the top right. You can send us an email as well, wellstech@wells.net, or leave us a voicemail. There's a little box that floats above the window magically waiting for you to click on and speak to us. We'd love it if you would. Please take some time to do that, and we'll share your feedback with the community, and we'll all learn. Thanks. Next week, Sally, what's up?
Next week, we're going head-to-head. We're doing Mac versus PC, iOS versus Android, and I think you and I are on the opposite sides on both of those accounts, so it should be an interesting show. We'll talk about pluses and minuses of different computing platforms.
Yeah, let's start a little debate. Roll up our sleeves a little bit next week.
Brought a Mac home recently, and my boys accused me of going to the dark side. So.
But you're going to take the PC side, I assume.
That's correct. Okay. Still running a PC on my Mac. So
okay, yes, all right. Let's close the show by letting everybody know that there is a new download for everybody. If they'd like to download some music from one of our Wells featured artists, this time it's from Patrick Watson. Is that a new name, Sally?
Brand new to the Wells Tech Podcast. He is an instrumentalist and plays some serious rock and roll, it seems. I listened to the song we're going to feature today. It's called Joy. Didn't sound like any melodies that I was aware of in Christian Hymnden, at least, but he wrote it to capture the joy and excitement felt when Jesus entered Jerusalem on Palm Sunday. So cool. You can just picture that as you listen to Patrick's music.
So you have to go to the show notes to get that link. It'll be available for 1 week. You can download it and then play it as many times as you like. Compliments of Wells Tech and Patrick Watson. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.